Before we dive in, I want to let you know that this entire episode, including the voices you're hearing, is AI-generated. Today's show is brought to you by Mindflow Tea, a fictional blend designed to enhance clarity and focus during deep conversations. And please remember that some details in our discussion might not be perfectly accurate, so do check anything important for yourself. I'm Sarah, and today we're exploring Jiddu Krishnamurti's On Love and Loneliness from 1993. With me is Michael, a philosophy teacher who's spent years studying Krishnamurti's approach to human relationships and consciousness.
Thanks for having me, Sarah. This book really cuts to the heart of why so many people feel isolated despite being more connected than ever.
Let's start there. Why did Krishnamurti feel compelled to write about love and loneliness specifically?
He observed that most people live in a kind of psychological isolation, even when they're surrounded by others. We create these barriers through our concepts, our expectations, our need to possess and control.
And he saw this as a fundamental human problem, not just a personal issue?
Exactly. He argued that our loneliness stems from how we've been conditioned to think about relationships. We treat love like a commodity or a security blanket rather than understanding what it actually is.
What gave Krishnamurti the authority to tackle these deep questions about human nature?
He spent over 60 years observing human behavior and consciousness without allegiance to any particular philosophy or religion. He wasn't interested in creating another system, but in helping people see clearly what actually happens in their relationships.
So this wasn't academic theorizing, but practical observation?
Right. The book emerges from decades of dialogues with people from all walks of life. He was particularly interested in why intelligent, well-meaning people still struggle so much with loneliness and authentic connection.
What makes his approach different from other books on relationships or love?
Most relationship advice tries to fix problems within the existing framework of how we think about love. Krishnamurti questions the framework itself. He asks whether what we call love is actually love at all.
That sounds potentially uncomfortable for readers.
It is. He's not offering techniques to improve your relationships. He's suggesting that our entire approach to love and connection might be fundamentally flawed.
Which brings us to his central thesis. What's the core argument of the book?
Krishnamurti argues that loneliness is the inevitable result of psychological isolation, which we create through our self-centered thinking. And what we usually call love is actually a form of mutual dependence that perpetuates this isolation.
So he's saying that even in our closest relationships, we remain fundamentally alone?
Not necessarily alone, but isolated by our own mental constructs. We approach others through the filter of our needs, fears, and expectations, rather than meeting them directly.
Can you give me a concrete example of what he means?
Think about when you say, "I love you" to someone. Often what you're really expressing is, "I need you," or, "You make me feel good about myself." That's not love, according to Krishnamurti. That's dependence disguised as love.
And this dependence actually increases our sense of isolation?
Yes, because you're not actually connecting with the person. You're connecting with your image of them and what they provide for you. The real person remains unknown.
This seems to challenge pretty much every romantic ideal in our culture.
Absolutely. The idea of finding your other half or someone who completes you is exactly what Krishnamurti sees as the problem. You can't be completed by another person because you're already whole.
What's his evidence for this view? How does he support such a radical claim?
He points to the observable facts of human relationships. Despite our romantic ideals, most relationships involve conflict, possessiveness, jealousy, and eventual disillusionment. He asks us to look at why this pattern is so universal.
And his answer is that we're approaching love from a fundamentally self-centered perspective.
Right? Even our desire to love and be loved is often rooted in our own psychological needs rather than genuine care for another person. This self-centeredness prevents real intimacy.
Where does this perspective fit in the broader conversation about love and relationships?
Most Western philosophy and psychology focuses on improving the self or managing relationships more skillfully. Krishnamurti is more aligned with certain Eastern traditions that question the whole structure of selfhood.
But he's not offering a Eastern philosophy as an alternative, is he?
No. He explicitly rejected all organized philosophies and religions. He wanted people to observe these patterns directly in their own experience, not adopt another belief system.
So what does he propose as the alternative to this dependent, self-centered approach to love?
This brings us to his key insight about the difference between loneliness and aloneness. He argues that we need to understand aloneness without fear before we can understand love.
That distinction seems crucial. How does he define each term?
Loneliness is the painful feeling of being cut off, isolated, empty. It's what drives us to seek completion through others. Aloneness, on the other hand, is a state of wholeness and self-sufficiency.
Can you walk me through how someone might recognize the difference in their own experience?
When you're alone and immediately reach for your phone, turn on the TV, or start planning your next social interaction, you're likely running from loneliness. When you can sit quietly without needing anything to change, that's closer to aloneness.
So aloneness isn't about being physically by yourself?
Not at all. You can be alone in a crowd or together with others while being completely alone. It's about not depending on external circumstances for your sense of completeness.
How does this relate to his understanding of love?
Krishnamurti suggests that only when you're no longer seeking something from another person can you actually love them. Love, in his view, is the absence of self-centered thinking in relationship.
That sounds almost impersonal. Is he talking about a kind of detached compassion?
Not detached at all. He's talking about intimacy without psychological dependence. When you're not trying to get something from someone, you can actually be present with who they are.
Let's get practical. What does he suggest people actually do to move from loneliness toward this kind of aloneness?
His primary method is what he calls passive awareness, or choiceless observation. Instead of trying to fix or change your loneliness, you simply observe it without judgment or escape.
Can you walk me through what that might look like in practice?
Let's say you're feeling lonely on a Saturday night. Instead of immediately calling someone or going online, you sit with that feeling. You notice how it manifests in your body, what thoughts arise, what you want to do about it.
And you just watch all of this without acting on it.
Exactly. Krishnamurti suggests that when you truly observe something without trying to change it, transformation happens naturally. The observation itself is the action.
How is this different from mindfulness or other awareness practices?
Most mindfulness techniques have a goal, even if it's just becoming more mindful. Krishnamurti's approach is about observing without any agenda whatsoever. You're not trying to become less lonely or more loving.
That seems paradoxical. How can observation without goals lead to change?
He argues that our psychological problems exist because we're constantly trying to escape from them or fix them. This very effort maintains the problem. When you stop struggling with loneliness, it can reveal what it actually is.
And what does it reveal?
Often, that loneliness is the shadow of our self-centered thinking. It's the inevitable result of seeing ourselves as separate from others. When you really see this, the whole structure begins to dissolve.
Let's take a specific relationship scenario. How would someone apply this approach with a romantic partner?
Your partner does something that triggers jealousy. Instead of acting on the jealousy or trying to suppress it, you observe it. What is jealousy actually? What thoughts and physical sensations make up this experience?
And what might that observation reveal?
You might see that jealousy is rooted in possessiveness, which comes from fear, which comes from your image of yourself as someone who needs this relationship to be secure or happy.
You're seeing the whole psychological structure behind the emotion?
Right. And once you see it clearly, without condemnation or justification, it loses its grip on you. You can respond to your partner from clarity rather than from your psychological reaction.
Does this approach work with other relationship patterns like conflict or disappointment?
Krishnamurti suggests it works with any psychological state. The key is the quality of attention you bring. It has to be free of any desire to change what you're observing.
What about in friendships or family relationships where there's ongoing tension?
Let's say you have a family member who consistently criticizes you. Instead of defending yourself or planning your counterattack, you observe your reaction. Why does their opinion matter so much to you?
And this observation might reveal what exactly?
Maybe that you're still seeking their approval, or that you have an image of yourself that their criticism threatens. When you see this clearly, you can relate to them without that psychological baggage.
This sounds like it requires a lot of psychological courage.
It does. You have to be willing to see aspects of yourself that you might prefer to ignore. But Krishnamurti argues this is the only way to be free from the patterns that create loneliness.
Are there common mistakes people make when trying to apply this approach?
The biggest mistake is turning observation into a technique or method. People start watching their thoughts with the goal of becoming more enlightened or less lonely. That defeats the whole purpose.
So you can't use this approach to get somewhere else?
Exactly. The moment you have an agenda, you're back in the realm of self-centered thinking. The observation has to be completely free of any desire for personal gain.
What about the tendency to analyze or intellectualize what you're observing?
That's another common pitfall. Krishnamurti distinguishes between intellectual analysis and direct perception. Analysis is still thinking about something. Observation is just seeing what's actually happening.
How can someone tell the difference in their own experience?
Analysis involves commentary, comparison, and interpretation. Pure observation is more like looking at a sunset. You're not thinking about it, you're just seeing it.
Let's talk about implementation. If someone only did one thing after reading this book, what should it be?
Start observing your loneliness without trying to escape from it. The next time you feel that empty, disconnected feeling, don't immediately reach for a distraction. Just be with it completely.
How long might it take to see results from this kind of practice?
Krishnamurti would reject the whole idea of practice and results. He's not offering a gradual path to improvement. He's suggesting that insight can happen immediately when you see something clearly.
But surely it takes time to develop the capacity for this kind of observation.
He'd say that any conditioning or development is still within the realm of self-improvement. The seeing has to be fresh each time, not based on previous experience or accumulated knowledge.
That seems to go against how most people approach personal growth.
Absolutely. Most approaches are about gradual change over time. Krishnamurti is pointing to the possibility of immediate transformation through direct insight.
How do you adapt this approach to different personality types or life circumstances?
The beauty of his approach is that it doesn't need adaptation. Whether you're introverted or extroverted, wealthy or poor, the basic structure of psychological isolation is the same.
But what about people who are dealing with clinical depression or severe trauma?
Krishnamurti acknowledged that some people might need therapeutic support, but he maintained that the fundamental issue of psychological isolation affects everyone, regardless of their particular circumstances.
Are there situations where his approach might not be appropriate or effective?
He'd probably say that the approach is always relevant because the human condition is always the same. But practically speaking, people in crisis might need more immediate, concrete support.
What about cultural differences in how love and relationships are understood?
Krishnamurti argued that psychological patterns transcend cultural differences. The forms might vary, but the underlying structure of dependence and isolation is universal.
Let's turn to some critical evaluation. What does this book do brilliantly?
It cuts through all the romantic and psychological nonsense we layer onto relationships and points directly to what actually happens between people. There's a stark honesty that's both shocking and liberating.
And it offers a radically different perspective on some very common human experiences.
Yes, it reframes loneliness not as a problem to be solved, but as a pointer to something much deeper about how we relate to ourselves and others.
Where does the book fall short or overpromise?
The biggest limitation is that Krishnamurti offers no concrete steps or practices. For many readers, the insights remain intellectual because there's no clear path to embodying them.
Is that a bug or a feature of his approach?
He'd say it's essential. Any method or practice becomes another form of conditioning. But practically, it leaves many readers feeling inspired but helpless.
What about his claim that transformation can happen immediately through insight?
That seems overstated for most people. While profound insights can certainly shift your perspective, the patterns he describes often have deep psychological and even biological roots.
How does this book compare to other work in the field of relationships and personal development?
It's much more radical than most approaches. Books like The Seven Habits or even Nonviolent Communication work within the existing framework of selfhood. Krishnamurti questions the framework itself.
And compared to other spiritual or philosophical approaches to love?
It's less systematic than Buddhist or Hindu teachings about attachment, but also more direct. He's not asking you to adopt a belief system, just to observe what's actually happening.
What important aspects of love and relationships does the book leave out?
Doesn't address the practical realities of long-term partnership, raising children, or dealing with illness and loss. It's more concerned with the psychological structure of relationship than its lived complexities.
Where should readers look for what this book doesn't provide?
For practical relationship skills, something like John Gottman's research-based approaches. For deeper psychological work, maybe something that integrates body-based approaches with the kind of awareness Krishnamurti points to.
Is there anything else readers should be cautious about?
The approach can be used to avoid genuine intimacy under the guise of non-attachment. People might become emotionally distant and call it spiritual maturity.
How has this book influenced broader conversations about love and consciousness?
Krishnamurti's work influenced many contemporary spiritual teachers and therapists who emphasize present moment awareness in relationships. His ideas show up in everything from mindfulness-based couples therapy to non-dual teachings.
And in popular culture?
The influence is more subtle, but you can see it in the growing questioning of traditional relationship models and the emphasis on personal wholeness before partnership.
What criticism has the book received over time?
Some critics argue that Krishnamurti's approach is too intellectual and doesn't account for the embodied emotional nature of human attachment. Others say it's unrealistic to expect people to transcend their psychological conditioning so completely.
Has anything changed since the book was written that affects its relevance?
If anything, it's become more relevant. Social media and digital connection have made the gap between being connected and being intimate even more obvious. People are more networked, but often more lonely.
The loneliness epidemic seems to validate some of his observations.
Absolutely. Despite having more ways to connect than ever, rates of loneliness and depression continue to rise. That suggests the problem isn't about finding people to connect with, but about the quality of connection itself.
As we wrap up, what's the single most important shift in thinking this book offers?
Stop looking to other people to complete you or make you happy. That very seeking is what prevents genuine intimacy and perpetuates loneliness.
And the most practical takeaway?
When you feel lonely, don't immediately try to fix it by reaching out or distracting yourself. Sit with the feeling completely and observe what it actually is without trying to change it.
That simple practice could reveal everything the book is pointing toward.
According to Krishnamurti, yes. True observation of loneliness reveals the psychological structure that creates it. And when you see it clearly, you're already free from it.
Michael, this has been a profound conversation. Thanks for helping us understand Krishnamurti's radical approach to love and loneliness.
Thank you, Sarah. The book really challenges us to question our most basic assumptions about human connection. That's uncomfortable, but ultimately liberating.